Sharing research to thousands online and catching up with a PGA Tour professional. It's all on Tennessee Tech Today this week. Hello everyone, I'm Buddy Pearson, the News and Communications Director, and thanks for tuning in to Tennessee Tech Today. Well, Tennessee Tech alum Scott Stallings has been enjoying a lucrative career on the PGA Tour, and we'll get into our conversation with Scott in a little bit. But first, we start off with Provost Lori Bruce and her research. Holding the title of Professor of Electrical and Computer Engineering at Tech, Bruce gives three or four such lectures worldwide each year. As provost, she provides leadership to and oversight of eight colleges and schools, offering bachelor's, master's, and doctoral programs. Earlier this week, however, her research reached thousands. Bruce gave an online presentation, Hyperspectral Remote Sensing with Applications of UAVs for Precision Agriculture, which reached more than 14,000 people. And Lori Bruce joins us now. So, how did this particular lecture come about?
Yeah, so this one came about through a professional organization that I'm a member of. We refer to it as IEEE. So it's IEEE. It's the Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineers. And it's a professional organization that most electrical engineers, computer scientists belong to. It has over 400,000 members worldwide. And in that very large organization, there's kind of little subgroups. Some may be related to consumer electronics, others related to remote sensing, others related to biomedical applications. And there is a subgroup within that organization called the Geoscience and Remote Sensing Society. It has about 10,000 members worldwide. It's an international organization. And they have eight distinguished lecturers, and I'm one of the distinguished lecturers for that society. So I get invited to give talks around the world. I usually give three or four a year.
What was this particular presentation about? It must be exciting to have a presentation that reaches that many students and faculty.
Yeah, that was. So normally in the summer, we have a series of research presentations that the distinguished lecturers give. Usually involves traveling to some place and giving a talk, and you know, I might normally have 300 or 400 people in attendance at a talk, maybe up to 1,000. But because of COVID, all of those are being done online this summer. But it actually, I think, turned, you know, for this purpose, kind of enhanced the experience because people didn't have to travel to the site to hear the talk. So there was a lot more interest worldwide, people wanting to log in and hear the talk. And so this talk had, they told me, over 8,000 people pre-registered and logged in and listened to the talk. And it might be surprising to people that many people around the world would be interested in a talk so specific. Yeah. It's a talk very specific about, so I'll tell you the title of the talk, Hyperspectral Remote Sensing with Applications to Unmanned Aerial Vehicles for Precision Agriculture. So a little bit of a mouthful. You wouldn't think that many people would be interested in that niche of an area, but it's actually a very popular area that's moving from research to operations. And so there's lots of small kind of startup companies now starting to take the things that we've been researching for the last 20 years and really put them into operation in the field. In a commercial way. So there's a lot of renewed interest in the research area because of that. Mm-hmm. So I can kind of explain a little bit about what it is.
Sure.
So I'll explain what hyperspectral remote sensing is, yeah. And then I'll talk about unmanned aerial vehicles, and then I'll maybe explain precision ag.
Okay.
So hyperspectral remote sensing, the best way I know to describe it to people in a way that someone who's not an expert in the field can kind of relate to. When we take a picture with our phone and we get a color image, every pixel in that picture is represented by three numbers, a red, a green, and a blue. And so what the camera is really doing is it's measuring how much red, green, and blue light is reflecting off of whatever's in the scene.
Okay.
A hyperspectral sensor is, you can think of it kind of like a camera. It's an optical sensor, but it doesn't just measure red, blue, and green light. It measures infrared light, near infrared, shortwave infrared, thermal. And so every pixel in an image is not represented by three numbers, not an RGB value, but hundreds or thousands of numbers. And so it's measuring radiance that we convert to reflectance, but it's basically it's measuring or observing how much light is being reflected off of whatever's in the scene of the camera, but across a very wide swath of the electromagnetic spectrum. And because of that, you can look at an image, and if you've developed appropriate algorithms, pattern recognition and artificial intelligence algorithms, you can look at all those values of a pixel, and you can say, is that pixel grass? Is it just green paint? Is it a very specific species of grass? So in agricultural applications, if I'm flying this sensor over a crop and I'm viewing the crop, I can start to detect different species of weeds in the crop. I can detect certain kinds of vegetative stress in the crop. I can, I'm making it sound simple. It's very sophisticated algorithms that's working with this optical physical sensor. But there's potential there to do all kinds of agricultural applications with these types of sensors. In the 20 years ago, I was flying them on satellites. And so when we were flying the sensor over on a satellite, we didn't have very good spatial resolution. Like a pixel might be a whole field. Right. And then we slowly got the sensor smaller and we put them on planes. Mm-hmm. Okay, now I can kind of see crops. Right. Now we've miniaturized the sensors to where they're on little small drones, little quadcopters and small UAVs. And so we can fly them right over the crop. And now I can look at individual leaves on a plant. And I can start to say, okay, this plant has this kind of stress. It's nutrient stressed. It has moisture stress. It has a chemical stress. And so working with plant pathologists, and I'm an engineer, we kind of partner together and develop the algorithms to be able to manage agricultural crops in very precise ways. That's why it's called precision agriculture.
What was the response at the end of your presentation?
Oh, it was great. I mean, I had people from all over the world logged in. It was about a two-hour time slot. So I gave the lecture for about an hour and a half, and then we opened it up to Q&A. So of course, you got that many people online. We got hundreds of questions, but I had people helping facilitate and organize the questions so that I could respond. And I got questions about what kind of problems do you have with your planes? And well, hey, how does this algorithm work? So the questions ranged from very, very physics-based questions and mathematical questions, say from PhD students, all the way to kind of very introductory questions, maybe that someone's new to the field, new to that discipline's logged in and listening. So it was a wide range of questions, but it was exciting to have that many people interested in the research and hung in there to the end of the talk and was really very high energy and very active with asking questions.
Well, it's gotta make you feel good to know that so many people tuned in to listen to your lecture.
Yeah, I'm quite surprised. They started out telling me, oh, we might have as many as 1,000. And then a week out, they told me, okay, we've got 4,700 people registered. I'm like, oh. And then, of course, people wait to the last minute to register for things like that. So right before, literally as I'm about to start talking, they said, oh, yeah, we have over 8,000 people logged in. So I was like, oh, no pressure.
So do you have any more of these set up?
Not in the near future, but I do 3 or 4 a year. And I think with moving to doing them online, I think there'll be even more demand for them because oftentimes these are aimed at graduate students. They don't have a lot of money to travel to conferences and to travel to hear you speak in person. So I think the online approach will actually increase the demand for those kinds of research talks.
Is there anything else you want to add?
The one thing I would say is I think it's very fulfilling as a faculty member, because I fundamentally still view myself as a faculty member, that when we do research, we can see immediate impact to society. And so the research may be very physics-based, a lot of math and a lot of computer algorithms, but it's very exciting when you put that kind of work into something and then you can immediately see applications that benefit society. It's very satisfying.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll hear from our very own Scott Stallings and how life is treating him on the PGA Tour. Stay with us.
More Tennesseans are turning to the state's best public university, Tennessee Tech. Tech produces bold, fearless, confident graduates who get an outstanding return on investment, who graduate with the least amount of debt in the South, who earn higher early career salaries. Tennessee Tech, just like our state, is soaring to greater heights. Tech is Tennessee. To find out more, visit tntech.edu/techistn.
Welcome back to Tennessee Tech Today. Scott Stallings made an impact on the golf course during his time at Tennessee Tech. A two-time Ohio Valley Conference Player of the Year, he won seven events and was named an All-American. After graduating in 2007 with a degree in business management, he took his golf game to the PGA Tour, where he has been successful for the past 9 years. During his career on tour, Stallings has won three times and accumulated more than $11 million in earnings. He's taken this week off, but he did have time for a Zoom conversation.
So what's it been like for you during this pandemic? I mean, COVID-19 has really messed up a lot of stuff. What's it been like for you and your family?
I mean, this is the longest I've ever had off in my career. So we just moved to a new house in Knoxville last June. So I've lived in this house in the last 12 months more than I've lived in any house in the last 5 years. So, I mean, it's been unique and everyone's had to make adjustments, but for us, it's been time off. It's been time and enjoyed. And, you know, we kind of live out in the country away and, you know, it was a break that was unexpected and, but definitely enjoyed with my family and just kind of time to be away from the game for a little bit.
Yeah. Now, you graduated from Tennessee Tech in 2007 with a degree in business management. How hard do you think it would have been to been in school during a pandemic like this?
I don't know, especially after seeing, I mean, my kids are nowhere near the point of going to college, but having some friends of mine that I play with that, you know, their kids are in that time period of trying to figure out if they're actually going to go to college this upcoming semester or take a gap year, just kind of all the other variables that go into just the evaluating the college experience of, I mean, I know what college was like for me, and I couldn't imagine going through college for 4 years through a screen, and, you know, but I'm also happy I'm not the one that has to make those kind of decisions either. I couldn't imagine. I know, you know, especially dealing with some of the guys on Tech's team and, you know, some other college golfers that I know, it, you know, it presented a lot of problems, but a lot of opportunity as well. You know, guys are, you know, kind of getting ahead in school, you know, taking a bunch more classes online to try to advance that, to give them a little bit more freedom when and if they do get to play again in the upcoming fall. And, you know, it's all about perspective and understanding, you know, this is the stuff that you're dealt with, and, you know, your attitude and kind of how you choose to go about it will determine a lot.
Yeah, you know, at Tennessee Tech, you were All-American, two-time Ohio Valley Conference Player of the Year. You won seven college events. And you did all that under the direction of the late, great Bobby Nichols. You know, he's been gone for a while, but how often do you think about him? Does he still cross your mind?
For sure. We were Polk is the coach now, and, you know, he played with me for a few years while I was there. And we actually – he's getting married coming up, and we went on a little golf bachelor party with him, and we started telling a bunch of stories about Coach back in the day. Just a bunch of some of the stuff that I don't know. He's probably looking down on us like, boys, don't tell those stories. it was a great experience. He probably believed in me more than I believed in myself, especially at that point in my career. He was the one that wanted me to, you know, take a little bit more ownership of my game and realize the potential I had to play at the next level. And at time, you know, especially at that age, I thought he was way harder on me than the rest of the team and singled me out a lot. And did a lot of things that I didn't enjoy as much as I probably should have, or understanding where he was coming from, especially now looking back. I mean, he was solely had my best interest at heart. But when you're 18, 19 years old, you see this older guy that's just, you know, kind of holding you to the fire every day and, you know, kind of letting the other guys slide by. And it's like, why are you singling me out? Nah, totally understand. I felt very fortunate that later in his career, especially my junior and senior year, I spent a lot of time with him individually, a bunch of tournaments that I had a chance to go to, just him and I, and the time that we got to spend together. There were some times on the putting green where I had some struggles at times where I had to do some drills that seemed like they were endless. definitely times we miss him, and I appreciate all the lessons that he taught me along the way.
Well, obviously he saw something in you because you went on to the PGA Tour in 2011. Since then, you won three times. You have collected over $11 million in career earnings. Did you ever think that when you were at Tennessee Tech that you would be able to have a career on the PGA Tour like you're having right now?
I mean, every day is a blessing, man. I think that, you know, I think I get an opportunity to go out and live my dream every single day, play on tour. I just got back last night and kind of getting resettled back into home for a week off after being on the road for, you know, like 4.5 weeks. And you look onto it, I wake up every day, I get to go play with the best players in the world on the best tour in the world and go out there and chase my dream. And I don't think a lot of people, you know, get a chance to do that. And I feel very fortunate to be able to do this for a long time. Next year will be my 11th year on tour. And, you know, it kind of flies by. I remember basically going out my first few years and asking every and all question I could. And I still ask a lot of questions. I feel like the guys that, you know, I was asking the questions to have kind of moved on to the, you know, later on their PGA Tour career into the Champions Tour. And I've kind of found myself somewhere in the middle and guys are starting to ask me questions. Not that I have all the information. Sometimes I just laugh and like, man, I'm trying to figure this out myself. But it's a very cool opportunity. I remember a story from my freshman year from the a Hall of Fame dinner. I think it was November. And I didn't know what we were doing. I had no idea what Hall of Fame meant. And I was acting like an idiot. And Coach Nichols, I was super disrespectful to the guys that were being honored. And, I mean, every one of them were older. I think one guy walked up there in a walker and just, like, trying to figure out at 18 years old, like, what in the world are we doing here? Right. And Coach singled me out in front of everyone. If you go in the multipurpose room in the upstairs of – there is a pillar where if I could have gone into the pillar and hidden at that moment, I would have, but I will never forget that conversation. I will never forget the things he said to me. Some things probably don't need to be repeated in this interview, but that stuck with me forever. And he said, if you had any sense, you would realize that at some point you have the potential to be the best player that's ever played here. And one day you'll be up on that stage. And I hope people will have the wherewithal to have the time and understanding of what you've done in your career at Tech and hopefully career past this place. And that stuck with me forever. Wow. And at the time I was very humbled and, but I mean, he was giving me a stern talking to and, you know, I deserved every bit of it, but also it was that moment that he saw something in me that I didn't see in myself. And I will never forget that. Every time I've been back in that room, I can show you exactly the pillar that I stood. And as he was talking to me, I felt like I got smaller and smaller and he grew bigger and bigger. And he didn't care who heard what he was saying. It was in front of God and everyone. And he let me know how he felt. And but just to go back to conversate to your original question, kind of go back to that one moment of my college career, and I was, all right, this is for real. The guy sees for whatever reason, it was by no means my lack of respect for the people in that they were being honored, but definitely something as far as my golf game, and he felt like he could kind of refine the stuff off the course, and he was a huge influence in all that, and. I apologize again to those people that were being honored. I was an idiot, but I definitely remember that time of being in Tech, and I remember that almost every single day as I'm living it out on tour and kind of going back to that one conversation.
Well, he was right because you went on to be an OVC, a Tennessee Tech Hall of Famer. You were inducted into the Tennessee Tech Hall of Fame, so I'm sure that was a big honor for you too. Now, I know even with all the success that you've had winning on tour, making the money that you've been able to give back to the community. And one of the things I think that that you have going on is the 2020 Scott Stallings Kids Play Free Benefit Tournament that's coming up in August at Holston Hills in Knoxville. Just talk a little bit about that.
Well, Kids Play Free started a few years ago, and it kind of came from another Tennessee Tech alumni, Ryan Greer's. I guess he's my business manager. He's one of my closest friends, but he's kind of one of those people in my life that no matter what the situation is, he can kind of speak in and, you know, kind of make his voice heard. And he challenged me along with a few other guys that are kind of in that core group. He's like, man, we don't really do anything to grow the game. We do things with high-level amateurs, high-level junior golf, with the tournament that I do in Nashville, the Tennessee Junior Cup that we do at the Grove, and just kind of challenging me, like, what are we doing to grow the game at the beginner level? And basically, we made a list of why people don't play, and it was time, cost, and availability, and basically partnered with the Tennessee Golf Association and some of the stuff that they do. And the foundation, now it was Mr. Dick Horton, now it's turned over to Whit Turnbow and his team. And between myself and Hayden Eccles and Ryan Greer and a sorts of other people here in East Tennessee, we came across an opportunity to provide golf 365 days a year for free and partner with a couple courses here in Knoxville and hopefully continue to grow that program. And the pandemic was good. We saw some exponential growth. The month of April was up 55%, and the month – or March was 55%. April was up about 70%. May and June, I just know that the numbers are astronomical, so I know that when the guys are starting to put together fundraisers, that's a good thing. And we've got a good support system here in East Tennessee, and hopefully have an opportunity to spread the program out throughout the rest of the state.
Yeah, that's great. Now, one of the things people may notice – is that you look a little bit different than you did when you were at Tennessee Tech, just a little. You know, you've slimmed down a little bit. Talk about this massive physical transformation that you've gone through.
Man, ultimately it comes down to, you know, not being a good steward of what you had. You know, not that I was, you know, intentionally trying to sabotage myself, but, I mean – you know, I kind of thought I could do what I wanted when I wanted, as long as, you know, the golf kind of took care of itself. And, you know, eventually you find yourself in a doctor's office trying to understand why you felt the way you felt. And, you know, I was sort of like a ticking time bomb as far as just a lot of small things were happening all at once. And it was ultimately my fault. And just, you know, ignorance is not an excuse, that was my excuse. And I didn't go to the doctor. I didn't do, you know, just little checks, and all that stuff could have been managed if I'd have just had the, you know, the due diligence to kind of make little things more of a priority. And next thing you know, they started adding up and got me to a point where I was asking some really hard questions to some people that were a lot smarter than me in terms of the medical field. And thankfully, we had a lot of people come around me, try to help me make better decisions, build some better habits, and understand that, you know, you make one better decision, you kind of build off of that, and understanding what a healthy lifestyle looks like. And the gym was kind of something that kind of came along with it. That was through the transition. That was about the only time of day I felt good. That's kind of counterintuitive to a lot of people. It's like, well, I hate going to the gym because I hate the way, you know, I feel and this. But, you know, through the process, that's kind of where I went to get away. And developed a love and a passion, just try to figure out a way to find the best version of myself in and out of the gym, and kind of have that build around, you know, the rest part of my day. And it's been cool to kind of hear some stories that come alongside it, and, you know, kind of try to be in between so people don't make the same mistakes that I did. And ultimately came down, had a complete sinus reconstruction kind of the end of 2015, and that began to, you know, kind of spark and help make some changes to get me to where I am today.
And you'd had success in golf. I mean, with the body you had before, I mean, it's not like you weren't playing good golf or hadn't won. I mean, you just had to do this for your own health, basically.
Yeah. I mean, everyone's like, oh, well, you played better, heavier, you won this and that. It's like, man, golf was going away. Golf was not getting any easier. Golf was, it was a significant challenge to just make it, you know, from tournament to tournament, and understanding like what that, the wear and tear of what that was going to take. And, and the trajectory that I was going on was by no means a positive one. And, you know, the fact that if it helped golf or hurt golf or whatever, man, I was trying to be the husband and the father that my kids and my wife deserved, and not the guy that literally played and came home and went to bed. And, you know, it was no way to live, no way to, you know, kind of manage my day. And I needed to kind of take some steps back and, you know, take some good hard looks in the mirror and figure out what I wanted to prioritize and, you know, be a good example for my kids and, you know, be a good helper for my wife along the way and, you know, do the things that they deserve out of a husband and a father. And, you know, golf is something that kind of followed along suit. And I think people kind of misconstrue people that, you know, do a sport at the highest level as far as it is my passion. It is a huge priority, but it is not everything and all when it comes to the matters of the health and your body. And it's because you only get one version of that. And once it's gone, it's gone. So trying to build up the best possibly can and, you know, every day on tour is a blessing. And by no means am I trying to discount that, because I mean, I'm trying to go out there and be the best version of myself on the course as well. But, you know, there are some swings that kind of come along the way. And that was definitely one when it came to that whole process of just trying to figure all that stuff out.
Well, here we are in 2020. You're 122nd in the FedEx Cup point standings. You tied for sixth at the Rocket Mortgage Classic a couple of weeks ago, where you shared the lead at one point. So where is your golf game right now?
It's good. It's a very unique season, obviously, during the pandemic. I average about 29 events throughout my career. So this season I'll play 17 or 18. So right before we got ready to shut down, I had played 10, or I think the Players was my 11th event, where we only played one round and obviously got canceled. But the Players was getting ready to be my 11 out of 13. I was getting ready to play 11 out of the next 13 events. So the summer is kind of where, if you look throughout my career, it's kind of my where I make hay through the most part. And a bunch of those tournaments that I played well at throughout my career got canceled. So it'd be interesting to kind of see. I've got three more events to kind of make a run here to the playoffs. But, you know, I think everyone is just the tour has done an incredible job to get us to the point. We've had five events. We've been able to improve every week. The testing's changed. The tour has been adaptable and understanding that as the virus has changed and as states we go and, you know, just battling every single day. The schedule for the fall is unique in regards to, you know, there's a handful of events that are out of the country and kind of managing that and, you know, what that kind of looks like as far as, you know, for my family as school starts and some restrictions from travel and managing all that other stuff. But, you know, I have a week off here before I get ready to go to Minnesota, and then I'll play in Reno. And then another week off, and then Wyndham. So hopefully having a couple nice weeks and manage my way into the playoffs and, you know, kind of build off of that from there.
Yeah, for sure. What's it been like playing without fans out there? Probably about like college, I guess.
Yeah, it's very unique, especially, you know, having a couple weeks where I was up around the lead. You know, I was in Connecticut. I was close. I was never really there. Rocket Mortgage, I had the lead there for a couple days, you know, early on Thursday and at some point early on Saturday, before the leaders teed off. I kind of got up there for a little while, and, you know, normally when that happens, you see the fans start rolling around or TV cameras, and it was just like, that was it. there wasn't much of anything. And, you know, you'll get the random, you know, guy that's along the fence row and, you know, saying good shot or whatever, but
yeah.
I hit a really good shot on this par three, and, you know, literally looking around for this, you know, some sort of oohs and ahs, and it's literally like, you know, my buddy that I'm playing with's like, good shot, man, and that's it. So I think it was a cool experience yesterday seeing the playoff between Justin Thomas and Colin, especially seeing all the social media, because most of the information that people were getting were coming from other players that were out there watching.
Yeah.
And I think that will be a time that, you know, kind of takes you back to the old days as far as where guys didn't, there wasn't the, it was sort of way more of a traveling circus, which is definitely what we are. There's with the charter planes and kind of everything, we're just a herd, and then we all together. So it's very unique, but you know, I don't think in any other tournament scenario you would see 15 to 20 players that have just played and competed to go out and watch the playoff. And I think that's super cool to see, and kind of, you know, the tour and Commissioner Monahan have done an incredible job to kind of unify the guys and understand that we're all in this together and trying to make the most of it, and hopefully be a shining light for other sports to kind of learn. And, you know, everyone, you know, going out and being the first sport to come back was a bold strategy for anyone. But for us to go out there and be as successful as we are, a low number of positive cases, and just the adaptability and understanding of what that looks like, especially in the scrutiny of the public eye, because we're the what everyone's looking to as far as finding examples of what to do and what not to do. And it's been very unique to be out there, but the tour and the places that we play have been very hospitable, and I'm proud to represent them, and hopefully give people something opportunity to look forward to on the weekends.
All right, man. Well, we appreciate you taking time to be with us. And, of course, you know, you're one of Tennessee Tech's favorite sons. Everybody is always tweeting and posting on Facebook. You know, did you see what Scott shot today? Or, you know, did you see he was on the leaderboard? So, you know, everybody still loves you in Cookeville and still follows you here at Tennessee Tech and is extremely proud of you.
Well, I appreciate it. And best of luck. Hope the fall comes along like everyone hopes. And, you know, I'm proud to be a Golden Eagle, and, you know, some of the best times of my life were spent there in Cookeville.
All right, man. Thanks for being with us.
All right. Thank you, man.
And that's going to wrap up Tennessee Tech Today for this week. Be sure to check out the TT website at tntech.edu or check us out on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Until next week's show, be bold, fearless, confident, and kind. Wings up, everybody.